greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up and climb between the ropes once again with Nnamdi Hollywood Moweta, our reigning prince of pugilistics. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
Nnamdi, let's begin with boxing's Pac-Man.
I'm Manny Pacquiao, the fighter from the Philippines.
Filipino boxing star Manny Pacquiao getting ready for what he says will be his final professional bout, a rubber match against Timothy Bradley on Saturday night in Las Vegas, Nevada. You're going to be ringside there, Nnamdi. Tell our VOA boxing fans what they can expect.
Well, they can expect two guys that have fought twice. This will be their third time, so they know each other. They can also expect a fight where one guy, Manny Pacquiao, will be pressing for the knockout and he leaves himself wide open to be knocked out.
How has the Pac-Man looked in training, Nnamdi?
Well, if you remember, my first visit to training, he didn't look that great. And they said that was due to jet lag. But my last visit, he looked really sharp and the old Manny Pacquiao looked really good. But executing it on Saturday night is a different thing. Anybody can look great in training camp with the mitts and the bags and all that and fast hands and speed bag. But executing it at the age of 37 with a bad shoulder, being off from the ring for more than 11 months, long layoff, we will know Saturday night.
Nnamdi, last time we chatted about Pacquiao Bradley 3, you said ticket sales, pay-per-view sales in particular, have been lagging for this fight. Any update there?
There's no buzz for this fight. In the fight game, I would say there's no juice, Sonny. Nobody's hawking tickets. Ringsides are not going for no $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, Sonny. To make matters worse, his anti-gay comments didn't really help anything, you know. So, and going the same night with the big fight coming out of the O2 arena, it just makes it very difficult for fight fans to get up and put down $60 for this fight.
We'll talk about that fight at the O2 arena. But first, do you feel like this will be the Pac-Man's final fight? I've read reports that he's even talked about the Olympics in Rio.
He better have his eyes on the ball for Saturday night, because after Saturday night, if Bradley do a number on him, he may not be talking about Rio. Sonny, he's talking about Canelo now. He's talking about Khan, you know. He wants to pick up all the money he can, you know. If he looks good against Bradley Saturday night, we'll see a fight with him and Canelo in the fall. But how about if he gets knocked out? He's on the floor. He's counted out by the referee. That would be the end of his career.
Nnamdi, as you mentioned, the same night that the Pac-Man is fighting Bradley, Anthony Joshua goes after a heavyweight title. He takes on American Charles Martin at the O2 Arena in London. I think you said you'd rather be at that fight, Nnamdi.
For real, Sonny, I'd rather be in London than in Las Vegas, man. In London, there'll be a firework. And the big boys, when they drop bombs, they drop hammer, man. So the London fight was announced later on. By the time we look around, we've already locked in the room at MGM Grand, so there's no way we could change it.
I've seen Martin fight Nnamdi. What can we expect from him on Saturday in London?
Remember, he's a southpaw, a lefty. Not only is he a lefty, he's a puncher too. He can punch. Don't let us underestimate him. He can punch. He's a lefty. He's going to really go out there and try to do all he can to keep his title. But Anthony Joshua, at 6'6", 15-0, 15 knockouts, 26 years old, I think this is his time, and he needs to do something. He needs to make a statement Saturday night. We got to look at the resume of Martin. Who did he really beat, you know, to be in this position, really? On the side of Anthony Joshua, His last fight really showed me a lot. His last fight made me a believer against Dillian White, where the dangerous uppercut he threw right towards the end of the fight really, really showed me that this cat can fight, and he has power in both hands. But if you're fighting a southpaw, there are some basic things you must do. Foot position is number one. If you can't put your leg outside, you'll be in deep trouble. You must be able to counter. If you cannot counter, if you cannot land your big right hand, you're going to be in trouble, you know. And if you make the mistake of walking into the left hook, you're out.
Mm. And do you think he's ready for Martin and his southpaw style, Nnamdi?
The southpaw style will give him trouble Saturday night. And that's why it's very important to know who is in the corner giving him instruction when he comes back after each round. If the guy in the corner just does not have the basic knowledge of what to do with his southpaw and what they did in training camp, Anthony Joshua will be exposed Saturday night in front of his own people in London.
Here in Washington, Nnamdi, you called it mission impossible. A handful of African fighters on a fight card that the headliner was Adrian Broner, and we'll talk about Broner. But first, how did those African fighters do, Nnamdi?
Well, we named that fight Mission Impossible going into Washington, D.C. Nobody came out there with a victory. What we are dealing with right now is a bunch of Africans who are not really, really out there to do anything solid. These guys are fighting, but they're just fighting to survive. And they're not really making money, Sonny. By the time they pay the trainer, they pay the manager, and they pay the agent, which we call in boxing the Undertaker, because he delivers all the dead guys. By the time the African finish paying all these guys, he really doesn't have that much left in his pocket. And if he ends up with a broken jaw, Sonny, you're an American. In America, you know how much it could cost you to be in a hospital, you know?
Thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah. A guy goes in for a six-round fight. He pays all these hangers-on. By the time he has, maybe he's left with a couple of hundreds in his pocket. And he ends up with a broken jaw. He's in the hospital. The insurance will not cover everything. He's out of a lot of money and he's in deep trouble, you know. So these guys should really stop fighting, really. And I don't want to put anybody on the blast. Some of these guys should just go back to whatever they want to do. I mean, that should be life after boxing. And get out of the ring because they can get hurt.
Adrian Broner won his fight here in Washington, Nnamdi, but perhaps facing a bigger fight in terms of legal repercussions. Tell our VOA boxing fans about that.
Sonny, he is facing felonious assault and aggravated robbery. You wonder why a millionaire boxer is out at night gambling in the bowling alley. I'm talking about high-stakes gambling at 3 a.m. This is what he did. They were betting on the bowling, and then he lost $12,000. What did he do? He ended up waiting for the guy outside the bowling alley, knocked him unconscious, took the $12,000. So guess what happened? They allowed him to fight, but he had to turn himself in last Monday, and they bailed out a $100,000 bond. So he's looking at close to 5 to 10 years in jail. Sonny, this cat is really talented. He can fight. Don't get me wrong. So you're talking about a four-time division world champion, you know. But his behavior outside the ring, and we have to trace that behavior back to Al Haymon. Al Haymon came on the scene with $400 million from venture capitalists, you know. And this money went to boxing, to paying the fighters. Adrian Broner ended up fighting on television. Those fights, before Al Haymon came on the scene, those fights, he would have been paid $150,000 or $175,000. How much did he get paid for those fights on TV, which were like sparring partners fighting? He was paid a $1.4 million, $1.2 million. All this money, send this bro crazy, man. Going to strip joints, throwing money in the air, acting up because he was overpaid. And this is where he finds himself gambling at 3 a.m. and beating up the man. He may end up in jail 5 to 10 years. And he's talking about challenging Floyd Mayweather. He must be out of his mind.
Thanks, Nnamdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta.
Galala. Great show, bro. They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
One of our big basketball stories this week was Villanova winning its second U.S. men's collegiate title in thrilling fashion in Houston, Texas. In what's being described as one of the greatest finals in the 78-year history of the championship tournament, the Wildcats of Villanova edged the Tar Heels of North Carolina 77-74 on a buzzer-beating three-point shot by Chris Jenkins. For reaction, VOA's Rick Narcisse contacted the sports editor of the Villanovan student newspaper, Larry Flynn.
I was down in Houston. That was an incredible experience there. But on campus, things went absolutely crazy. There was a watch party at the pavilion where the team plays, and it just erupted in cheers after that Jenkins shot. Students pretty much took to the Lancaster Avenue, which is the main road by Villanova. They actually closed that down, and students were just out in the street having a great time and celebrating. And in Houston, it was unbelievable. I was sitting in a whole student section area. Everyone was cheering for Villanova the entire game. When the Jenkins shot went in, it just erupted in cheers. Everyone went back to the team hotel afterwards. The team came back. It was just an incredible experience and emotional roller coaster.
That last shot was amazing.
It was.
Can you tell us about your feelings and emotions at that last shot and how everyone reacted in that section?
When that shot went through, I'm not sure I could really process it. I mean, we saw Jay Wright's reaction on the sideline, how he kept the stoic look on his face, and it's like he knew the ball was going in as soon as Jenkins touched the ball in rhythm and in stride. But for me, I was jumping up and down. I was sitting next to my dad, who I've converted to a Villanova basketball fan, and we were just jumping up and down, and the crowd was absolutely screaming. It's like nothing else I've ever seen in my life. And I think the team basically mobbed Jenkins on the court. You know, I've gotten to know a lot of these guys personally and have been able to cover them. And it was just such a joy to see someone like Chris, who's one of the most confident guys on the team, be able to take and make that shot. To see a guy like Arch have the unselfishness, even to see a guy like Daniel Ochefu, who's incredibly kind and gracious, to mop the floor for the little kid was just a great moment. I think that final 4.7 seconds really just summarized the careers of those three guys perfectly.
If you had to take a pick, which shot do you think is bigger, Christian Laettner's shot or Chris Jenkins' shot for the game winner?
I would have to say Chris Jenkins. I may be a little bit biased, but I think Villanova, no one really believed could win the national championship. I think Duke was a team that people thought could win. Obviously, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, and Kentucky had a talented team as well that year, guys like Jamal Mashburn. But this Villanova team was written off from day one. They were supposed to lose in the second weekend, second round game, and they did not. They did the exact opposite. They went all the way. And I think, to do so against a powerhouse like North Carolina made it that much sweeter even. And I'm going to go with the Chris Jenkins shot. I think it will go down as one of the greatest plays in basketball history, not just in NCAA tournament history.
I would have to agree with you on that. And it was for a championship, which made it that much sweeter.
Right.
So looking at individual performances, who would you say impressed you the most throughout the entire tournament?
I would say overall, you have your usual suspects. Josh Hart was terrific. Ochefu was terrific. Archie Diacono at the helm was fantastic. But I think actually one of the unsung heroes in this whole tournament was Mikal Bridges. I thought his defense and length added a whole different complexity to this Villanova team that they didn't really have. And the starting lineup is, there's athletic and good defenders in there, but they're kind of complete basketball players. But I'd say Bridges and his special and particular focus on the defensive end, locking down guys like Buddy Hield. His defense on Perry Ellis was phenomenal against Kansas. So I think Bridges was one of the unsung heroes. And then, of course, we have to talk about Phil Booth in the championship game, who played the absolute game of his life. He actually had a pretty down sophomore year, and I think a lot of fans and had kind of given up on him a little bit. I think people had kind of written him off as just the backup. But he reasserted himself and showed some of that promise that he had shown his freshman year in that final game. His ability to create off the dribble when the game got particularly tight was phenomenal. His one-on-one creativity with the ball was exactly what Villanova needed, as their offense stagnated at times during the game. So I think Phil Booth scoring the 20 biggest points of his life was a key man against North Carolina.
Looking at social media a little bit, there are a lot of memes flying around the internet after the game and even the day after, more and more being made every day. Do you have a favorite meme from the game?
Yeah, there were a good amount of funny ones. You have to mention the Crying Jordan one, of course. They put Crying Jordan on just about every North Carolina player. And I think it was particularly appropriate given the Jordan connection with North Carolina, of course. So I thought, although it's been overused at times, I thought this was one of the more appropriate times to use Crying Jordan meme.
That's Larry Flynn, the sports editor of the Villanovan student newspaper, located on the campus of Villanova University near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Larry was talking with VOA's Rick Narciss. Meanwhile, the Villanovan reports a parade for the national champion Villanova Wildcats will be held Friday afternoon in Philadelphia to celebrate the team's second national title and first since 1985. In pro basketball, the NBA spotlight will be shining brightly later Thursday night in Oakland, California, where the league's two top clubs will be on the court. The reigning champion Golden State Warriors will host the San Antonio Spurs in Oakland. The Warriors, currently with 69 wins, need to beat the Spurs and then win their last three regular season games to set a new NBA record for victories, 73. 20 years ago, Michael Jordan, with no crying meme around, and the Chicago Bulls, they won 72 regular season games and then went on to win the NBA championship. Meanwhile, the five-time champion San Antonio Spurs are also having an excellent season. The Spurs have a record of 65 wins and 12 losses, and some basketball fans feel the Spurs might have the best chance of dethroning the Warriors in the upcoming NBA playoffs. Turning to African athletics, distance running power Ethiopia is scheduled to begin doping tests on about 200 athletes. The alternative is to face further action by the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, and a possible ban by the International Association of Athletics Federations, the sport's world governing body. The IAAF says Ethiopia is one of five countries that are, in its words, in critical care over its drug testing system. The others are Kenya, Morocco, Ukraine, and Belarus. Kenya has missed two WADA deadlines and has until May 12th to fix its drug testing system. If it doesn't, Kenyan athletes could be banned from the Rio Olympics in Brazil in August. Russia is currently banned from international track and field competitions after WADA discovered widespread doping problems. Ethiopia's national track team doctor, Ayelu Tilahun, told Reuters news agency 75% of the tests will be taken within 3 months. Ethiopia is still scheduled to participate in the Rio Olympics. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, this is a story we brought you yesterday that Twitter had partnered with the NFL to broadcast Thursday night football games here in the U.S., and we're getting more information on this now about how this deal went down. Turns out that the NFL was working with Facebook initially, but then Facebook reportedly undervalued the content rights, and so the NFL said that if they're not going to, you know, pay enough money, I guess, then we're going to go to Twitter. Facebook says it was the other way around. They said that the NFL walked away, so it's kind of a back and forth on that. But Morgan Stanley, the big investment firm here in the U.S., says that Twitter reportedly is paid just $10 million for these 10 games. Yahoo paid $20 million last year to stream one game. Twitter's paying $10 million for 10 games. So they're getting a bargain here. But as Morgan Stanley notes, they said that they did in their analysis that Twitter's only going to make back about $6 million in ad revenue from these games. That leaves them $4 million in the hole. So why is Twitter doing this if they're going to lose money on this deal? They want new users. And they think that this is going to draw in more users to Twitter. it remains to be seen whether that'll happen.
Now, what about the ads? Do they run down your wall, your Twitter wall, during the game, or how does that work? Well,
apparently, the ads will just run in the video as it happens. As you're watching the game, there'll be commercial breaks, just like there are when you're watching it on TV, and that's when they'll run the ads. There's a bit of a contest over who will get what ad revenue and who can air what ads. It looks like the NFL is going to be airing the kind of national ads. Twitter can only air maybe local ads or targeted ads. So that might be a reason that they're getting a little less money for that. But we'll see how this plays out. You know, no real word yet on how they're going to broadcast it, if it's going to have its own kind of page. They did say that they wanted to open it up so even if you weren't logged into Twitter or a Twitter user, you could watch it, which is going to be very interesting how they get more users from that. It seems like they may have to go back on that and say, well, you have to have a Twitter account and you have to register to log in to watch it.
From a visual perspective, it seems that a bigger screen might be best for watching a National Football League game. You have 20-plus players on the field, officials, and if you're looking at that on a handheld device, could be rather difficult to, spot the action.
Yeah, people might be streaming it, you know, hooking up their phone to their TV or something to watch it on their TV or something. I don't know how they're going to go about doing that. But it looks like more and more these days people are just watching sports on their phones.
Okay.
Case in point, the other trending story today, the Masters 2016, of course, Masters Golf Tournament at Augusta. Seen people online taking pictures watching the Masters at work on their phones. So it is something that people use. They use digital devices like that. So I guess Twitter's banking on that.
Andrew, I would like to give a Sunny Side of Sports shout out for the veteran South African golf star, Gary Player. I think he's in Augusta, Georgia for the Masters. 80 years old. And I was watching some video online, hole in one by Gary Player at the age of 80.
It's a huge social media moment that people are talking about. You know, in this opening tee off for the Masters, you have Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, another, you know, titan of golf, and Arnold Palmer unfortunately wasn't able to tee off with Player and Nicklaus. He's 86 years old.
Okay.
And so he was, they said, very frail. But he was able to be there. It was really a touching moment when he was there and, you know, got a huge ovation. In fact, today they're saying is Arnold Palmer Day. So you're seeing a lot of people hashtag AP Day, hashtag Arnold Palmer Day, celebrating the man. And also the beverage, because, of course, a half lemonade, half iced tea, known as an Arnold Palmer, named after him. So
so these legends of golf, they do a ceremonial tee-off to officially start the tournament?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and for Player especially, Player's 80 years old, Gary Player. So, and this is the 80th Masters tournament. So really, it's, you know, his whole life, it's, you know, been going on. Right now, Jordan Spieth looks like he's ahead, looking to repeat the winner from last year. Lots of analysis, amateur analysis on social media, questioning, you know, who's going to be ahead, who's playing well, who isn't, and some of the fashion choices as well. I saw some tweets about some of the different hats that the players are wearing. There's always some colorful outfits, pants of varying shades of orange and whatnot that players try to stake their claim.
In terms of the attire, Andrew, I know we've talked about sponsorship of these athletes. Jordan Spieth, sponsored by Under Armour, and he proudly wears their clothing when he's on the course. But also, they treat him very well. I've seen him picked up after tournaments by Under Armour Jets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's just like any sport, maybe more so with, you know, things like golf and tennis, where it's one individual player. You can kind of make a play for them if you're a sporting goods company and say, well, if we can get them wearing our stuff, it's easier maybe to manage that one person than trying to get a team to do it, or, you know, a one person on a team. When you're a golfer or maybe a tennis player, you're up there. You have the screen. It's just you. So you've got a big old Under Armour logo on your shirt. You've got a big Nike swoosh. It's big money for those companies. And then they reward them very handsomely with jets and things.
Big money at stake. Private jets all at the Masters.
It's the good life, I'm telling you.
The good life. Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. See you on Friday, Andrew.
We will see you Friday.
And that wraps up the April 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Oh.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
10 years, 60 countries, nearly 100 women. That was the milestone the U.S. Department of State marked with the 2016 Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award. This year, 14 courageous women were honored. Sarah Hossein is a human rights lawyer who helped draft Bangladesh's first comprehensive legislation on violence against women. Nihal Naj Ali Al-Awlaki is a pioneer in Yemen, where she serves as a minister of legal affairs and the only woman on Yemen's official delegation to peace talks. Deborah Baptiste Estrada has refused bribes and uncovered drug and human trafficking operations in the male-dominated Belize Department of Immigrations. Roger Reg Wathanafanit was subjected to so-called attitude readjustment because her bookstore promotes democracy and freedom of expression in Thailand. Her son was killed by a terrorist, but today Latifa Ibn Ziyatin works with families and young people to promote peace in France. Vicky Ente Tema investigated witch doctors who murdered and sold the body parts of people with albinism. Despite threats against her, she remains an activist in Tanzania. Thelma Aldana started her career as a janitor. Today, she is the Attorney General of Guatemala, where she works to end corruption and gender-based violence. Awadea Mahmoud was jailed for organizing women selling tea in Sudan. Thousands have joined her call for women's economic empowerment. Dr. Nagam Nawzat Hassan was one of the first to respond when ISIL killed, kidnapped, and brutalized Yazidi women and girls. She works to ensure survivors get the care they need. Zuzanash Jiavulova stands up for the rights of migrants and refugees in Slovakia. A judge threw Nisha Ayub in prison for being a transgender woman, but she emerged as determined as ever to fight for LGBT rights in Malaysia. After her father was murdered for being an opposition leader, Zhanna Nemtsova committed herself to exposing corruption and supporting families of political prisoners in Russia. Fatimata Embai is the first woman attorney in Mauritania and one of the best. She's taken on very difficult cases to protect human rights and dignity in her country. For her work defending Chinese legal rights, Niu Lan was thrown in prison, where she was beaten so badly she is now paralyzed from the waist down. Yet she continues her work on behalf of others. These are 14 women of extraordinary courage, said Secretary of State Kerry. One very clear message out of all this: don't accept the unacceptable or wait for someone else to step up. Act in the name of justice, act in the name of tolerance, act in the name of truth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.